You're now tuned in to the Front Row Hoopcast. Your show for everything Butler basketball. Welcome to the Front Row Hoopcast, your show for everything Butler basketball. I'm your host, Ari Castle. Brendan King is not with us today, but I think I found a very capable replacement. The one and only Mr. David Woods from the Indianapolis Star. Mr. Woods, thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Ari. This will be fun.
No problem. You know, I call you Mr. Woods. A lot of people don't know this. You actually, we met, you were teaching Butler journalism class at Butler, and so I always will call you Mr. Woods to this day, always and forever.
Well, you don't have to do that. You can just call me Dave or Woodsy or what everybody else calls.
That's
me.
What everyone at the Star calls you, right, Woodsy?
Yeah, usually. Yeah.
That's what I heard. So you've been covering Butler since like you were in the womb, right? How many years has it actually been?
This is my 16th season. So since 2001 with a 2-year interruption, but yeah, it's gone fast.
What was the deal with that? Like, why they move you off the beat? I always wondered about that.
They just shook it up a little bit, and then. Zach Kiefer did it one season, and Michael Pornet did it one season.
Yeah, that didn't go over too well, as I recall.
And then they decided to come back to me, and I didn't really something I saw it, but I was happy to resume, and it's been fun. You know that the Butler story continues.
So, I've told two of my friends that you were going to come on today and do this show, and they both asked me the same thing. They're like, ask Woods who his top five favorite Butler players are of all time. And I was like, I can barely answer that question. So I want to throw that to you to see if you had a top five at any point, if you had anyone listed there.
Yeah, I do have a top five, but I guess I should, with the only caveat, I'm very predisposed to like shooters.
Oh, so listen, I know Rodney Clark has got to be on that list. Like, didn't you drive down to Oklahoma to do a story on him?
Yeah, in fact, that's probably I don't know if it was the best profile I ever did of a Butler basketball player, but it remains my favorite because I think Rodney Clark had such an unusual high school experience, and it was cool to go down there it's probably the favorite Butler story I've ever written, actually.
Rodney Clark Road. They have a street named after him down there, I'm pretty sure.
I think they might. So yeah, but they had to keep moving it away because
yes,
people would steal it.
Yes, he was telling me that. But who else is on the top five? Like, is Hayward there?
I maybe not.
What?
Maybe not.
Give me some names then. I'm dying to know this.
Okay, my favorite player, just because he was such a freakish shooter, was Pete Campbell.
Before my time, but I'm very familiar with who
he
is.
Yeah, so Pete Campbell was probably my favorite Butler player to watch. Rodney Clark was second. And probably, and this is kind of the antithesis of this, Kyle Marshall might be my third favorite Butler player.
Are you serious? You named two of the best shooters in Butler history, and then Kyle Marshall, the man who shot 45% from the free throw line his senior year?
Yeah, he was just fun to watch. I don't know if he was the best dunker in college basketball at the time, but he was amazing, and he could do some amazing things. I'll certainly remember a game. It was the year after the second back-to-back. Butler had a team of non-shooters. I mean, they couldn't shoot for all. In fact, sort of off-topic, Ronald Norridge set a school record that year for assists, which I think is probably one of the great achievements of Butler history, considering he set a school record for assists on a team that couldn't make baskets.
I know you love Nuggets. I remember the leading scorer shoot 3-point percentage on that team was Eric Fromm at 34%. And I know you love statistical nuggets. That's a true fact. I remember that.
Yeah, that's amazing. But the game I remember there is that Loyola, as it should have done, zoned Butler in a game at Loyola. And I thought, oh, this is going to be a disaster. I mean, Butler can't make a basket at all. And the weakness in the zone is like along the baseline. Mm-hmm. So they just stationed Kyle Marshall on the baseline. He would run to the rim, grab a lob, and dunk it. I mean, he did that about five times.
Six times that game.
Yeah, it was almost comical.
I bet you, I don't know if you ever heard this story. I don't know if Kyle will even be okay with me saying this, but this is, did you know he almost transferred to South Carolina after his sophomore year?
I didn't, but I've talked to, I don't know, quite a few Butler players from time to time, and or just college basketball players in general, and you find that lots of them considered transfer, including
so
LaVal Jordan.
So weird.
LaVal Jordan was going to transfer, and his father basically forbade
him no.
it. Said, no, you're not transferring, so it's not happening.
I always thought that one was weird. Kyle, because you know you go to two Final Fours, and then
You know, you think about Lee. I always thought that was crazy. I didn't know if you knew that story or not.
I did not know.
There
that
you go.
Story,
there's
but,
a
but,
scoop.
But lots of college basketball players, including those at Butler, consider transferring.
You mentioned Rodney Clark was in your top three. My personal favorite Butler basketball.
Well, I got to finish my top five.
You're right. We only did three.
That's
yes.
Right. I would say maybe fourth was Kellen Dunham.
Good choice.
And then probably the probably also in my top five would be Thomas Jackson, the small point guard. I just love the way he played. He was so good at slowing the offense up if it needed to be slowed up, and you know, going at a fast pace if it could. He played on the famous 26-6 snub team. Of 2002, and I don't know if I hold myself, but the top three I'm pretty set on with Campbell and Clark and Kyle Marshall.
That is kind of random, but
and sometimes there's just no explanation.
No.
You just kind of have a favorite player, and I certainly had other players who I admired a lot, or respect a lot, who were fun to watch. But you know, just in terms of enjoying watching them play, you know, those are probably my five.
You mentioned going back to what I was. So we were talking about Rodney Clark, and for me, my personal favorite Butler basketball moment, and not even probably my favorite moment in my life, was when Rodney Clark hit the buzzer beater in Maui. I was right behind the bench. I've never experienced to this day like pure euphoria like that. Like, I'm chasing that feeling.
Yeah, you're on the video. I've seen you.
Oh my, I like relive it every day. It gives me chills. Do you have a favorite moment like covering? Tough question.
Maybe. Well, just in terms of a last second shot.
Singular moment. Yeah.
I'd say probably singular moment was the. Was Bruce Pearl, Milwaukee Panthers, in town 2003, sold out Hinkle Fieldhouse. Butler, the winner of the Butler-Milwaukee game, was going to be the Horizon regular season champion. And Butler had a big lead in that game, fell behind Avery Sheets. I'm getting goosebumps right now as I'm saying this. Avery Sheets, makes a three-pointer as time expires, and Butler wins the regular season championship. The thing that's really so important about that in hindsight, of course, was important at the time. You know, Butler did not win the league tournament because the league tournament that year was at Milwaukee, and Brandon Miller was sick. Butler played very poorly. But because Butler won that game and won the Horizon League regular season championship, that allowed them into the NCAA field. And really, they barely made it. I think that was a year maybe in which I think a couple of schools even voluntarily withdrew themselves from the field.
Really?
You know, for NCAA misdeeds. So, I mean, Butler could not have come in by a closer call, and then proceeded to beat Mississippi and then Louisville and get to the 2003 Sweet 16. And I think in a lot of ways that kind of prefaced what was become later, because I think Butler as a program kind of had a vision for what was possible, and that they could, you know, strive higher. And I don't, you know, obviously it's been almost unimaginable what Butler has done in the 2000s.
You talked about yourself getting goosebumps. You've been covering Butler for a while. He's a journalist. You have to remain unbiased. But at this point, don't you have to admit that you're a fan? Or is that taboo?
I respect what they've done. I think anybody would, and I think it's what it's interesting about Butler's story in a way is that Butler has been like covered in the off season, like almost the entire, you know, when the college basketball writers have to write about something in the summer and the off season, and they have been written about in the off season like ever since I can remember, and I just find that to be amazing, because I don't even know if Purdue and Indiana have regularly been written about in the off season as Butler has. So that's, I don't know if that's not sort of off topic, but it is, you know, they're an interesting program. You know, the college basketball national media, I think, like reporting their story, and their rise certainly parallels that of Gonzaga in the 2000s, mm-hmm. but it differs in that, you know, Gonzaga's had the same coach.
I know,
They went from Monson to Few, and Butler's had one coach after another with really, you know, largely seamless transitions.
I contend that had Brad Stevens still been the coach at Butler, I think they might have won a national championship by now.
I can't dispute that.
You told me when it was my sophomore year, so 2011, that Brad Stevens was going to be the national basketball head coach one day. And I was like, you are high. This dude's coaching the Horizon League. You might have been a prophet, because I bet you after Popovich, Brad Stevens is the head coach.
I'm almost certain he will be. And I told Tracy Stevens that at a Butler basketball camp one time.
What'd she say?
She's kind of speechless. No, I told him that Brad would be the coach of the U.S. Olympic team at some point.
That is seriously unbelievable. Have you ever gotten like an angry phone call from a coach before for writing something? Because in my life, I've gotten 5 angry phone calls from Butler coaches or assistants about things I've tweeted. I can only imagine you have gotten some angry phone call from like a coach saying, what the hell did you write that for?
Not so much angry. I had a sit down with Chris Holtman once. He was kind of disappointed with something, but he's such a nice guy. He really didn't complain. And then a couple times, Brad Stevens would have like Jim McGrath, the sports information director, kind of call on his behalf, kind of, you know, disappointed with something or other about what I wrote. One of them I think is particularly amusing, because I think Brad would even laugh about it now, because it was at a game at Green Bay when Hayward was just kind of, you know, lost in space out there. And because I was sitting close to the court, which you're not always at every venue you stay at, and Brad yelled at him, Gordon, you're in La La Land, and benched him. And I, because I heard that, you know, I quoted that during the story, and I don't think he didn't want to do anything to damage his relationship with Gordon Hayward, which is basically unassailable. You can't damage it. But then I was talking about him later, and I don't know, I think about that incident, and Brad kind of said, well, you know, he was. So that was kind of funny.
So you've never gotten, because I've like gotten 4 phone calls from Michael Lewis before, like, and if you know Michael Lewis, that's the last
very
person.
Very intense.
Yes. So like lots of F-bombs. Like you've never gotten a screaming phone call.
No.
Oh, you're lucky.
I am.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not
the,
fun.
The by and large, I think the Butler coaches seem to understand what it was that the beat writer for a covering a team did. So I never got such a phone call. I was told those who covered Michigan State got phone calls
Izzo?
All the time,
yeah.
From Izzo. But they actually had a great relationship with Izzo. So, you know, so that was just kind of an interesting dynamic.
Well, you in particular were so close to the Butler basketball program for years, like inside access. I always want to know, there's obviously things that you've heard that you can't print, because it would damage your reputation with the coaches or the players, and you know, you want to maintain that access. Is it difficult trying to find like that fine line between what you can say and what you can't, or as a journalist, you just say, I don't need to be buddies with these guys?
No, I'm not. I've really never been buddies with ever. Like Brad Stevens, I never got a piece of inside information from Brad Stevens, like ever, ever. And really, if I knew it and could corroborate and improve it, and if it was, you know, damaging to Butler, I've always reported it. But I really, but some things like you hear about, but you know, some things do turn out to be not true, as you know. So in anything I've known and could corroborate, I've reported.
So I don't know if you ever listened to this podcast before, but I kind of have like a love-hate relationship with Butler this year, especially Paul Jorgensen. I have just railed on Paul Jorgensen on the show, maybe unfairly. I wanted to know what you think of Paul Jorgensen this year as a for someone who loves shooters like you do. What do you think of his game?
I love Paul Jorgensen.
Why?
I think he brings a edge and swagger that the team needs and has needed. His percentage has actually been pretty good. I think his percentage from 28 feet might be as good as it is from 20, which is kind of a weird dynamic. And I think he's also improved as a defender. And I kept thinking that they would bring him off the bench and, you know, go back to starting McDermott. But since, you know, McDermott had that ankle injury and they went to the 3-guard lineup for a while, LaValle has just stuck with that. And because Kamar Baldwin is such a good rebounder from the guard position, it hasn't really hurt him. You think you could really get vulnerable and be damaged if you're running a three-guard lineup rebounding, but they really haven't been.
Didn't they go to the Final Four with a three-guard lineup of Norred and Feasley and Shelvin Mack?
Yeah. And my Fighting Illini went to a Final Four in 2005. Probably the best team never to win the national championship was Illinois 2005, and they had a three-guard lineup. So it's doable if you got the right guy.
I mean, I don't know if you want to proudly admit you're a Fighting Illini fan right now. They're looking terrible in basketball right now.
Yeah, they're a bad team. They're hard for me to watch.
No, you mentioned Paul Jorgensen. I can't believe I'm still getting into this, but he's shooting 38% from the field in conference play and like 29% from three. Like, I get that he's got the swagger and everyone loves him, but I feel like I'm the only one looking rationally saying, like, listen, this dude shoots a ton of junk-ass shots, and I just don't think it's worthy of all the praise.
Let's see. In league play, 32% from three, which isn't very good.
No.
And 39% from
that's
overall.
Very bad.
Yeah. No, those aren't good numbers. But I still think he's been a net plus. As I would say, on Butler's team, it shows you how difficult it is to win in the Big East. I think you can make a case that Keelan Martin has performed better than expected. Or certainly up to what anybody could have expected, as have Henry Baddeley and Paul Jorgensen and Sean McDermott. And still, you know, Butler is still, you know, kind of, you know, trying to avoid bubble status and trying to get back to the NCAA tournament. And I just think getting to the tournament for this group would be an achievement, because they're not really overwhelmingly gifted. And having lost four seniors off of last year's team, including two point guards and the playmaking forward like Andrew Schrabisch, and bringing a new coach, I mean, it wasn't going to be seamless.
Do you think there's any NBA players on Butler's team right now, Keelan or Kamar?
I see Kamar having a better shot as Keelan. I see Kamar as being a four-year guy and then having a decent chance to play. And I don't rule it out for Keelan Martin either, but I think as a pro prospect, and because he's a sophomore and Keelan's a senior, I see Kamar is having a better chance.
See, I've always thought, a lot of my friends disagree with me, I think Keelan's perfect for the NBA, like a 3-and-D, like he can D up dudes. He's an underrated defender.
You know, he has improved his defense a lot, and you know, he is thick, and he's not that he's like Shelvin Mack a lot, but I remember when Shelvin Mack is in college, people had always referred to his NBA body. Stop. Well, Keelan Martin also is also you know, a thickly muscled,
yeah,
thick guy you just can't push around. And I don't know if he shoots threes. I mean, he kind of is spurty, so I don't know if he shoots the three quite as well as he needs to. But if he's not drafted, which he probably won't be drafted, because it seems like late in the second round, NBA teams are enthralled with unpronounceable European,
that's right,
European players in those rounds. But I would think he would get a chance to be in a camp. And maybe he's one of those guys who shouldn't go overseas right away, but play in the D League in case he could get, you know, called up during an NBA season. But he certainly has made a lot of progress, and I don't think you can rule the NBA out for him. But I'm more confident that Kamar can play in the NBA.
You and I have talked about this privately before, where Butler fans on Twitter, whenever, like, I'll tweet out something negative or say something negative about, you know, a player or a coach, and I'll just get blasted. I think when you're writing your Jordan Tucker story, you wrote, like, he's attended, this is his fourth school in 4 years, and someone tweeted, like, how dare you write that? What an awful thing to say, Mr. Woods. Like, and I was sitting there thinking, like, what's the big deal? Like, why do you think the Butler fans are, like, so protective of their, like, anything critical about Butler is instantly just jumped upon?
I don't know if it's necessarily Butler. Maybe Butler fans are more sensitive than some, but let's face it, all fan bases have a loopy fringe.
I would agree. That's all you're not gonna you are so political. Unlike me, I could sit here and say, like, those Butler fans are stupid sometimes. You can't say that.
The Butler audience has treated me so well, because I actually don't think the Butler audience is stupid.
Oh, I mean they're not. I was just saying that.
I think they're pretty astute, and I've been very, I would say, very fortunate. I'd say fortunate to have the longevity, but because I've done it such a long time, I don't. If I write something negative about Butler, I get almost no pushback from fans because I think they think, well, if that's the way he evaluates it, that I think they see that as fair comment. At least I hope they do, because I certainly try to be level.
No, I would agree, and I think when Zach was on the beat for 1 year,
that was a bad team.
I was gonna say that team was horrible, but like, I think people got so used to your writing style that like, whenever Zach would like make any sort of negative connotation that like was totally fair, like he'd saying like, you know, Butler's three pointers are terrible and something like that. And I mean, he would just get jumped and people would be like, this is not what we're used to in this writing. So I've always thought that Butler fans were especially loyal to you. Like when you came back on the beat, like, I mean, there was overwhelming joy in Hinkle Fieldhouse. So I think there's like this loyalty between you and the Butler fans where they just love you, man.
Yeah. Well, they've been very nice and supportive of me. And I say, I don't get the, you know, if I'll say, you know, Butler's not defending this, I can say people almost, or Butler, you know, if I write Butler's defense is terrible because of this reason, I don't get the pushback. I get people writing in, yeah, I was wondering if anyone else noticed besides me or something like that. So that was kind of funny. And I remember when Holtman's second season, it was my first season back, at the midpoint of the Big East season, Butler was 3-6.
And he was getting heat, yeah.
And I think I wrote, that did not look like a team that could make the NCAA tournament. And really, in hindsight, what a great achievement for Butler to go 7-2 in the second half. And I thought that was a phenomenal achievement, you know, getting that team in after a 3-6 first half of the league schedule. But, I mean, it does sound cliche-ish, but I've seen so many amazing things happen that for me to completely discount, the so-called Butler magic, it would almost not be appropriate to do it, because you've just seen so many things happen that logically you didn't think probably could happen.
Years ago, I don't know if you know Matt Mitchell. He does the scoreboard for Butler. He used to be the producer. He was a Butler student for a while. He and I, when Brad Stevens left, he was a sophomore, I was a senior. We said, when Brad Stevens wins a national championship or an NBA championship, that him and I would take the underdog's book and we were going to make a 30 for 30 documentary with it. And we were like, good idea. We probably thought it would happen in like 10 years. It may happen a little bit sooner. Can I get your commitment to be a part of the underdog's documentary when we make it?
Well, I'd like it to be a 30 for 30, but I would go one step farther. And admittedly, there's an element of selfishness in this. I would rather have the screen rights to Underdogs sold to a movie producer so it become a feature film, because I think it's good enough. Now, maybe a little bit more space needs to be done, but there are plenty of stories in that Underdogs book to make it a feature film. And it's not a remake of Hoosiers.
No.
It's its own thing. I don't know how to bring in, you know, all the various
backstories
and to make that work, because I'm not a screenwriter, but a skilled screenwriter, I think, would know enough to do it. And I don't know if you could do it with flashbacks. Maybe you couldn't, but there's enough there with making, I would say, that the key characters being Stevens, Gordon Hayward, and Ronald Norred. If you made those, and maybe to a lesser extent Matt Howard, and concentrate on those as the key characters. And but, you know, and you wouldn't even have enormous amount of basketball footage, but you'd have to have some. But there's just a lot of cool backstories to that. You know, it could start with. There's various ways to film.
Oh, I know how it's going to start,
and all of them are cool.
The way I got in my head. The way it starts is, it's the national championship game versus Duke. Hayward's half court heave goes, banks off the glass, and everyone's like, well, the miracle run is over for Butler. And then the credits roll and it's, you know, flashback. And then it goes back to when they go back the next year. Are you I mean, you mentioned the film rights. Do you like, is that an option? Like shopping them around?
I think so. Yeah.
Are you doing it?
I'd have to check with my literary agent. He would be kind of the guy to do that. But it's writing a screenplay has got to be very difficult.
I would imagine.
And there's enough in the Underdog story of the 2010-2011 run, you would not have to make anything up. I've told people before, I've at talks trying to promote the book, reeling off all the things that happened. He said, if you proposed this,
it would, yeah,
as a film or as a novel,
they'd laugh you out of the building.
Exactly. They say, well, Mr. Woods, this is all very interesting, but this is all too far-fetched and very stupid. And, you know, you realize that fiction has to be somewhat believable or it doesn't work.
That's right.
And this is not believable. Consequently, we would not accept this, manuscript. The caveat being, it was all true. It's all nonfiction.
I want to give you a plug for it, because I've read Underdogs 50 times in my life. Like, the last line of the book where you go, it doesn't matter that Hayward's shot didn't go in. That would have been a lucky shot. The Butler Bulldogs were an ongoing miracle. Like, I get chills just saying that line. I'm telling any Butler fans, you need to get Underdogs, okay? It's literally like the Bible of Butler basketball. It's phenomenal. I've read it 15 times. I know how it ends every single time, but it's just, it's so good. I had to give you a plug for that. And I want you to write a third part to it, because after Brad left, like the whole when Brandon Miller came in, then when he left and Chris Holtmann came, and like, if Butler gets back to another Final Four, are you writing a third part?
Yes.
Thank God. I want to be a part of that. And if the movie happens, I need to be like a producer.
I don't know. I've already had a friend of mine wants to play the role of a Ronald Norred's dad, and he'd actually be good at it. So I don't know. See, I'm already getting it lined up.
Right? I know. We're working it out here. The strings are getting put together. Well, Mr. Woods, I really do appreciate you coming on the show today. This was definitely awesome. Do you have any last thoughts, any predictions for the team this year? Or are you not allowed to make predictions?
I don't make predictions unless I'm required to do so.
You are required to do so.
You know, I think I've gone back and forth. I'm thinking now more that I think Butler will slip in to the NCAA tournament. I think they'll make it because they're 5-4 now, and I think 9-9 gets in. And I also see but depending how they do against Marquette, if they can win at Marquette Wednesday night, that would go a long way toward an 11-7 record. And I think 11-2 record would be maybe even worth a number 6 seed in the tournament, which I think would be phenomenal.
I know we are all looking forward to it. I'm sure we will stay in touch, keep the Bulldogs. Hopefully we can get you back on the show after Butler does make the tournament. We'll bring you on for an update. But for now, thank you again for coming, Mr. Woods. And we always end the show where I always say, IU sucks, go Dogs. I know you can't say IU sucks, but can you give me a go Dogs?
Go Dogs.